Chapter 4. The Expulsion.
"You ask me, I believe, Colonel, what is the meaning of this?"
Fomar brought out with a solemn dignity, as though enjoying the general consternation.
"I am surprised at the question. Will you, on your side, explain how it is you can bring yourself to look me in the face now? Explain to me this last psychological problem in human shamelessness, and then I shall depart, the richer for new knowledge of the depravity of the human race."
But my uncle was not equal to answering him. With open mouth and staring eyes, he gazed at Fomar, alarmed and annihilated.
"Merciful heavens, what passions!" hissed Miss Perepolitsin. "Do you understand, Colonel," Fomar went on, "that you had better let me go now, simply without asking questions? In your house even I, a man of years and understanding, begin to feel the purity of my morals gravely endangered. Believe me that your questions can lead to nothing but putting you to shame."
"Fomar! Fomar!" cried my uncle, and a cold perspiration came out on his forehead.
"And so allow me, without further explanation, to say a few farewell words at parting, my last words in your house, Yegor Ilyich. The thing is done, and there is no undoing it. I hope that you understand to what I am referring. But I implore you on my knees, if one spark of moral feeling is left in your heart, curb your unbridled passions, and if the noxious poison has not yet caught the whole edifice, then, as far as possible, extinguish the fire."
"Fomar, I assure you that you are in error," cried my uncle, recovering himself little by little and foreseeing with horror the climax.
"Moderate your passions," Fomar continued in the same solemn voice, as though he had not heard my uncle's exclamation. "Conquer yourself. If thou wouldst conquer all the world, conquer thyself. That is my invariable rule. You are a landowner. You ought to shine like a diamond in your estate. And what a vile example of unbridled passion you set your inferiors! I have been praying for you the whole night, and trembled as I sought for your happiness. I did not find it, for happiness lies in virtue."
"But this is impossible, Fomar," my uncle interrupted him again. "You have misunderstood, and what you say is quite wrong."
"And so remember, you are a landowner," Fomar went on, still regardless of my uncle's exclamations. "Do not imagine that repose and sensuality are the destined vocation of the landowning class. Fatal thought. Not repose, but zealous work. Zealous towards God, towards your sovereign, and towards your country. Hard work, hard work is the duty of the landowner. He should work as hard as the poorest of his peasants."
"What? Am I to plough for the peasant, or what?" growled Bachev. "Why, I am a landowner, too."
"I turn to you now, servants of the house," Fomar went on, addressing Gavrila and Falilei, who had appeared in the doorway. "Love your master and his family, and obey them humbly and meekly, and they will reward you with their love. And you, Colonel, be just and compassionate to them. A fellow man, the image of God, like a child of tender years, so to say, is entrusted to you by your sovereign and your country. Great is the duty, but great also is the merit."
"Fomar Fomitch, my dear man, what notion is this?" cried Madame la Générale in despair, almost swooning with horror.
"Well, that is enough, I think," Fomar concluded, paying no attention even to Madame la Générale. Now to lesser things. They may be small, but they are essential, Yegor Ilyich. Your hay on the Horinsky waste has not been cut yet. Do not be too late with it. Mow it and mow it quickly, that is my advice.
But, Foma...
You meant to cut down the Zirianovsky copse, I know. Don't cut it. That's a second piece of advice. Preserve forest land, for trees retain humidity on the surface of the earth. It is a pity that you have sown the spring corn so late. It's amazing how late you have been in sowing the spring corn.
But, Foma...
But enough. One cannot convey everything, and indeed there is not time. I will send you written instructions in a special book. Well, goodbye. Goodbye, all. God be with you, and the Lord bless you. I'll bless you, too, my child, he went on, turning to Ilyusha. And may God keep you from the noxious poison of your passions. I bless you, too, Falalei. Forget the Komorinsky, and all of you... Remember, Foma. Well, let us go, Gavrila. Come and help me in, old man.
And Foma turned towards the door. Madame la Générale gave a piercing shriek and flew after him.
No, Foma, I will not let you go like this, cried my uncle, and overtaking him, he seized him by the hand.
"So you mean to have resort to force?"
Foma asked haughtily.
"Yes, Foma, even to force,"
answered my uncle, quivering with emotion.
"You have said too much, and must explain your words. You have misunderstood my letter, Foma."
"Your letter!"
squealed Foma, instantly flaring up as though he had been awaiting that minute for an explosion.
"Your letter!" Here it is, your letter. Here it is. I tear this letter. I spit upon it. I trample your letter under my foot, and in doing so, fulfill the most sacred duty of humanity. That is what I will do if you compel me by force to an explanation. Look, look, look!
And scraps of paper flew about the room.
I repeat, Foma, you have misunderstood it.
Cried my uncle, turning paler and paler.
I am making an offer of marriage, Foma. I am seeking my happiness.
Marriage? You have seduced this young girl, and are trying to deceive me by offering her marriage, for I saw you with her last night in the garden under the bushes.
Madame la Générale uttered a scream and fell fainting into an armchair. A fearful hubbub arose. Poor Nastenka sat deathly pale. Sasha, frightened, clutched Ilyusha and trembled as though she were in a fever.
"Foma," cried my uncle in a frenzy, "if you divulge that secret, you are guilty of the meanest action on earth."
"I do divulge that secret," squealed Foma, "and I am performing the most honourable action. I am sent by God himself to unmask your villainies to all the world. I am ready to clamber on some peasant's thatched roof, and from there to proclaim your vile conduct to all the gentlemen of the neighbourhood and all the passers-by. Yes, let me tell you all of you, that yesterday in the night I found him in the garden, under the bushes with this young girl whose appearance is so innocent."
"Oh, what a disgrace!"
piped Miss Perepolitsin.
"Foma, don't be your own destruction!" cried my uncle, with clenched fists and flashing eyes.
"He!" squealed Foma. "He, alarmed at my having seen him, had the audacity to try, with a lying letter, to persuade me into conniving at his crime. Yes, crime, for you have turned a hitherto innocent young girl into a—"
"Another insulting word to her, and I will kill you, Foma, I swear."
"I say that word, since you have succeeded in turning the most innocent young girl into a most depraved girl."
Foma had hardly uttered this last word when my uncle seized him by the shoulder, turned him round like a straw, and flung him violently at the glass door, which led from the study into the courtyard. The shock was so violent that the closed door burst open, and Foma, flying head over heels down the stone steps, fell full length in the yard. Bits of broken glass were scattered, tinkling about the steps.
"Gavrila, pick him up!"
cried my uncle, as pale as a corpse.
"Put him in the cart, and within 2 minutes let there be no trace of him in Stepanchikovo!"
Whatever Foma's design may have been, he certainly had not expected such a climax. I will not undertake to describe what happened for the first minutes after this episode. The heart-rending wail of Madame la Générale as she rolled from side to side in an armchair, the stupefaction of Miss Perepalitzin at this unexpected behaviour of my hitherto submissive uncle, the sighs and groans of the lady companions, Nastenka almost fainting with fright, while her father hovered over her, Sashenka terror-stricken, my uncle in indescribable excitement, pacing up and down the room, waiting for his mother to come to herself. And lastly, the loud weeping of Falilei in lamentation over the troubles of his betters. All this made up an indescribable picture. I must add, too, that at this moment a violent storm broke over us. Peals of thunder were more and more frequent, and big drops of rain began pattering on the window.
"Here's a nice holiday," muttered Mr. Bachayev, bowing his head and flinging wide his arms.
"It's a bad business," I whispered to him, beside myself with excitement too. "But anyway, they have turned Foma out, and he won't come back again."
"Mama, are you conscious? Are you better? Can you listen to me at last?"
asked my uncle, stopping before the old lady's armchair. She raised her head, clasped her hands, and looked with imploring eyes at her son, whom she had never in her life before seen moved to such wrath.
"Mama," he went on, "it was the last straw. You have seen for yourself. It was not like this that I meant to approach this subject, but the hour has come, and it is useless to put it off. You have heard the calumny. Hear my defence. Mama, I love this noble and high-minded girl. I have loved her a long while, and I shall never cease to love her. She will make the happiness of my children, and will be a dutiful daughter to you, and so now, before you, and in the presence of my friends and my family, I solemnly plead at her feet, and beseech her to do me infinite honour by consenting to be my wife."
Nastenka started, then flushed crimson all over, and got up from her seat. Madame la Générale stared some time at her son, as though she did not understand what he was saying to her, and all at once, with a piercing wail, flung herself on her knees.
"Yegorushka, my darling, bring Foma Fomitch back," she cried. "Bring him back at once, or without him I shall die before night."
My uncle was petrified at the sight of his self-willed and capricious old mother kneeling before him. His painful distress was reflected in his face. At last, recovering himself, he flew to raise her up and put her back in her chair.
"Bring Foma Fomitch back, Yegorushka," the old lady went on wailing. "Bring him back, darling. I cannot live without him." "Mama," my uncle cried sorrowfully, "have you heard nothing of what I have just said to you? I cannot bring Foma back. Understand that. I cannot, and I have not the right to, after his low and scoundrelly slander on this angel of honour and virtue. Do you understand, Mama, that it is my duty, that my honour compels me now to defend virtue? You have heard. I am asking this young lady to be my wife, and I beg you to bless our union."
Madame la Générale got up from her seat again and fell on her knees before Nastenka.
"My dear girl," she wailed, "do not marry him. Do not marry him, but entreat him, my dear, to fetch back Foma Fomitch. Nastasya Yevgrafovna, darling, I will give up everything. I will sacrifice everything if only you will not marry him. Old as I am, I have not spent everything. I had a little left me when my poor husband died. It's all yours, my dear. I will give you everything, and Yegorushka will give you something, too. But do not lay me living in my grave. Beg him to bring back Foma Fomitch."
And the old woman would have gone on, wailing and drivelling, if Miss Perepolitsin and all the lady companions had not, with shrieks and moans, rushed to lift her up, indignant that she should be on her knees before a hired governess. Nastenka was so frightened that she could hardly stand, while Miss Perepolitsin positively shed tears of fury.
"You will be the death of your mamma!"
she screamed at my uncle.
"You will be the death of her. And you, Nastasya Yevgrafovna, ought not to make dissension between mother and son. The Lord has forbidden it."
"Anna Nilovna, hold your tongue," cried my uncle. "I have put up with enough."
"Yes, and I have had enough to put up with from you, too. Why do you reproach me with my friendless position? It is easy to insult the friendless. I am not your slave yet. I'm the daughter of a major myself. You won't see me long in your house this very day. I shall be gone."
But my uncle did not hear her. He went up to Nastenka and with reverence took her by the hand.
"Nastasya Yevgrafovna, you have heard my offer," he said, looking at her with anguish, almost with despair. "No, Yegor Ilyich, no. We had better give it up," said Nastenka, utterly dejected too. "It is all nonsense," she said, pressing his hand and bursting into tears. "You only say this because of yesterday, but it cannot be. You see that yourself. We have made a mistake, Yegor Ilyich, but I shall always think of you as my benefactor, and I shall pray for you always. Always."
At this point, tears choked her. My poor uncle had evidently foreseen this answer. He did not even think of protesting or insisting. He listened, bending down to her, still holding her hand, crushed and speechless. There were tears in his eyes.
"I told you yesterday," Nastia went on, "that I could not be your wife. You see that I am not wanted here, and I foresaw all this long ago. Your mamma will not give you her blessing, others too, though you would not regret it afterwards because you are the most generous of men, yet you would be made miserable through me with your soft-heartedness."
"Just because of your soft-heartedness, just because you are so soft-hearted, that's it, Nastenka, that's it!"
chimed in her old father, who was standing on the other side of her chair.
"That's just it, that's just the right word!"
"I don't want to bring dissension into your house on my account," Nastenka went on. "And don't be uneasy about me, Yegor Ilyich. No one will interfere with me. No one will insult me. I am going to my father's this very day. We had better say goodbye, Yegor Ilyich."
And poor Nastenka dissolved into tears again.
"Nastya Yevgrafovna, surely this is not your final answer,"
said my uncle, looking at her in unutterable despair.
"Say only one word, and I will sacrifice everything for you."
"It is final. It is final, Yegor Ilyich,"
Yezhevikin put in again. "And she has explained it all very well to you, as I must own I did not expect her to.
You are a very soft-hearted man, Yegor Ilyich.
Yes, very soft-hearted. And you have graciously done us a great honour. A great honour, a great honour. But all the same, we are not a match for you, Yegor Ilyich.
You ought to have a bride, Yegor Ilyich, who would be wealthy and of high rank, and a great beauty, and with a voice too, who would walk about your rooms all in diamonds and ostrich feathers. Then, perhaps, Foma Fomich would make a little concession and give his blessing. And you will bring Foma Fomich back. It was no use, no use your insulting him. It was from virtue, you know, from excess of fervour that he said too much, you know. You will say yourself that it was through his virtue, you will see. A most worthy man. And here he is getting wet through now. It would be better to fetch him back now, for you will have to fetch him back, you know.
"Fetch him back! Fetch him back!" shrieked Madame la Générale. "What he says is right, my dear!"
"Yes," Yezhevikin went on. "Here your illustrious parent has upset herself about nothing. Fetch him back, and Nastya and I, meanwhile, will be on the march."
"Wait a minute, Yevgraf Larionitch," cried my uncle. "I entreat you. There is one thing more must be said, Yevgraf. One thing only."
Saying this, he walked away, sat down in an armchair in the corner, bowed his head, and put his hands over his eyes, as though he were thinking over something. At that moment, a violent clap of thunder sounded almost directly over the house. The whole building shook. Madame la Générale gave a scream. Miss Perepelitsin did the same. The lady companions, and with them Mr. Bachiev, all stupefied with terror, crossed themselves.
"Holy Saint Elijah the Prophet!"
five or six voices murmured at once. The thunder was followed by such a downpour that it seemed as though the whole lake was suddenly being emptied upon Stepanchikovo.
"And Foma Fomich, what will become of him now out in the fields?"
piped Miss Perepelitsin.
"Yegorushka, fetch him back!"
Madame la Générale cried in a voice of despair, and she rushed to the door as though crazy. Her attendant ladies held her back. They surrounded her, comforted her, whimpered, squealed. It was a perfect bedlam.
"He went off with nothing over his coat. If he had only taken an overcoat with him,"
Miss Perepelitsin went on.
"He did not take an umbrella either. He'll be struck by lightning."
"He will certainly be struck,"
Bachayev chimed in.
"And he will be soaked with rain afterwards, too."
"You might hold your tongue," I whispered to him.
"Why, he is a man, I suppose, or isn't he?"
Bachayev answered wrathfully.
"He's not a dog. I bet you wouldn't go out of doors yourself. Come, go and have a bath for your plaisir."
Foreseeing how it might end, and dreading the possibility, I went up to my uncle, who sat as though chained to his chair. "Uncle," I said, bending down to his ear, "surely you won't consent to bring Foma Fomich back? Do understand that that would be the height of unseemliness, at any rate as long as Nastasya Yevgrafovna is here."
"My dear,"
answered my uncle, raising his head and looking at me resolutely,
"I have been judging myself at this moment, and I know what I ought to do. Don't be uneasy. There shall be no offence to Nastenka. I will see to that."
He got up from his seat and went to his mother.
"Mama," he said, "don't worry yourself. I will bring Foma Fomich back. I will overtake him. He cannot have gone far yet." but I swear he shall come back only on one condition, that here, publicly, in the presence of all who are witnesses of the insult, he should acknowledge how wrong he has been, and solemnly beg the forgiveness of this noble young lady. I will secure that. I will make him do it. He shall not cross the threshold of this house without it. I swear, too, Mama, solemnly, that if he consents to this of his own free will, I shall be ready to fall at his feet, and will give him anything, anything I can without injustice to my children. I myself will renounce everything from this very day. The star of my happiness has set. I shall leave Stepanchikovo. You must all live here calmly and happily. I am going back to my regiment, and in the turmoil of war, on the field of battle, I will end my despairing days. Enough! I am going!"
At that moment the door opened, and Gavrila, soaked through and incredibly muddy, stood facing the agitated company.
"What's the matter? Where have you come from? Where is Foma?"
cried my uncle, rushing up to Gavrila. Everyone followed him, and with eager curiosity crowded round the old man, from whom dirty water was literally trickling in streams. Shrieks, sighs, exclamations accompanied every word Gavrila uttered.
"I left him at the birch copse a mile away," he began in a tearful voice. "The horse took fright at the lightning and bolted into a ditch."
"Well," cried my uncle,
"the cart was upset."
"Well, and Foma?"
"He fell into the ditch."
"And then, tell us, you tantalizing old man."
"He bruised his side and began crying. I unharnessed the horse, got on him, and rode here to tell you."
"And Foma remained there?"
"He got up and went on with his stick," Gavrila concluded.
Then he heaved a sigh and bowed his head. The tears and sobs of the tender sex were indescribable.
"Polkan!"
cried my uncle, and he flew out of the room. Polkan was brought. My uncle leapt on him bare-backed, and a minute later the thud of the horse's hooves told us that the pursuit of Foma Fomitch had begun. My uncle had actually galloped off without his cap. The ladies ran to the windows. Among the sighs and groans were heard words of advice. There was talk of a hot bath, of Foma Fomitch being rubbed with spirits, of some soothing drink, of the fact that Foma Fomitch had not had a crumb of bread between his lips all day, and that he is wet through on an empty stomach. Miss Perepolitsyn found his forgotten spectacles in their case, and the find produced an extraordinary effect. Madame la Générale pounced on them with tears and lamentations, and, still keeping them in her hand, pressed up to the window again to watch the road. The suspense reached the utmost pitch of intensity at last. In another corner, Sashenka was trying to comfort Nastya. They were weeping in each other's arms. Nastenka was holding Ilyusha's hand and kissing him from time to time. Ilyusha was in floods of tears, though he did not yet know why. Yezhevikin and Mizinchikov were talking of something aside. I fancied that Bachiev was looking at the girls, as though he were ready to blubber himself. I went up to him.
"No, my good sir," he said to me. "Foma Fomitch may leave here one day, perhaps, but the time for that has not yet come. They haven't got gold-horned bulls for his chariot yet. Don't worry, sir. He'll drive the owners out of the house and stay there himself."
The storm was over, and Mr. Bachayev had evidently changed his views. All at once there was an outcry.
"They are bringing him! They are bringing him!"
And the ladies ran shrieking to the door. Hardly 10 minutes had passed since my uncle set off,
One would have thought it would have been impossible to bring Foma Fomitch back so quickly. But the enigma was very simply explained later on. When Foma Fomitch had let Gavrila go, he really had set off walking with his stick, but finding himself in complete solitude in the midst of the storm, the thunder, and the pouring rain, he was ignominiously pain-stricken, turned back towards Stepantchikovo, and ran after Gavrila. He was already in the village when my uncle came upon him. A passing cart was stopped at once. Some peasants ran up and put the unresisting Foma Fomitch into it. So they conveyed him straight to the open arms of Madame la Générale, who was almost beside herself with horror when she saw the condition he was in. He was even muddier and wetter than Gavrila. There was a terrific flurry and bustle. They wanted at once to drag him upstairs to change his linen. There was an outcry for elderflower tea and other invigorating beverages. They scurried in all directions without doing anything sensible. They all talked at once. But Foma seemed to notice nobody and nothing. He was led in, supported under the arms. On reaching his easy chair, he sank heavily into it and closed his eyes. Someone cried out that he was dying. A terrible howl was raised, and Falale was the loudest of all, trying to squeeze through the crowd of ladies up to Foma Fomitch to kiss his hand at once.